Welcome to the Dr. Wendy Rhodes Show. This podcast is designed for those who want to heal from the emotional and mental traumas sustained from childhood to adulthood. I am an overcomer of domestic violence, sexual assault, and rape as a teenager. It took a while for me to realize that I am not my trauma. I take my 20 plus years of experience in healthcare, along with my spiritual healing, to assist women healing, overcoming, and living in exile. They learn self-love redefined that is beautifully integrated with love, so that they too will know that they are not their trauma. Healing is definitely your portion. I am your host, Dr. Wendy Rhodes. Hello, blessings to everyone. This is Dr. Wendy Rhodes on the You Are Not Your Trauma Show. So today we have a guest and her name is Phyllis Levitt. She graduated from the University of Antioch University with a master's degree in psychology and counseling in 1989. Can you imagine that? I had my daughter in 1989. That's a lot of skills, talents over time, just growing and learning even more about herself and how to help other people. She co-directed a sexual abuse treatment program called Parents United in Santa Fe, New Mexico, until 1991. So, okay, y'all, we're going somewhere with this. Before going into private practice full time, that's what she did. She's been a psychotherapist treating children, families, couples, and individual adults for over 30 years. And she has worked extensively with abuse and dysfunctional family dynamics, their aftermath, and some of the most important elements for healing. Healing is very important. She also has published two books. The two books are called A Light in the Darkness and Into the Fire. And she's on her way to publishing her third book, and it's America in Therapy. Okay, so without further ado, I'm gonna bring our guest here, Miss Phyllis Levitt.
Thank you so much for having me. It's just wonderful to be here with you today. Thank you.
Yes. So Phyllis, thank you so much for accepting the invitation to come on You Are Not Your Trauma Show. And one of the main reasons why I really wanted you to come on here is because mental health does matter. And because mental health matters, people need to know, what is it about mental health? Like, what can, because there's so many stereotypes when it comes to, you know, mental health and getting a therapist. What do you think is the most important reason for people just getting a therapist, you know?
Yeah, well, let me say one quick thing about mental health. And I think that today it's just so important for the term mental health to be expanded and normalized. It's mental health is not just an issue or a problem for a select few of people on the fringes of society who are maybe on the extreme end of dysfunction. We're all dealing with issues of mental health in one way or another, whether it's in our own families or in our communities at large. We're affected by everyone around us. And so the ways we come to believe about ourselves and the coping mechanisms we learn and the ways that we are taught and practice human relations are the substance of our mental health. And so this is a term that I think we want to take out of the diagnostic box, if that makes sense.
So I was trying to kind of back out my background.
So that was a lead into your question, and now I don't remember what the original question was.
But it's okay, Phyllis. It's okay. So what I really want to know is what made you really go that direction into mental health?
Yeah. Well, it was my own mental health for sure. And I think that probably brings a lot of people into the fields that they end up following, is that it speaks to some issue that they've worked with in their own lives and feel that the journey they've taken maybe has some value for other people. So, you know, I had some trauma in my childhood, and it really colored my life. And one of the things that I really like to share with people is that when we have trauma in early life, it doesn't go away by itself. We figure out some way to cope. We come to believe things about ourselves that aren't really true, that are usually negative. And so it's actually very profound in the experience that I've had as a therapist over 30 years. I am astounded by what people have lived through, you know, that you wouldn't guess. And so I feel that the issue of mental health is a much more pressing issue on the individual level than many of us realize, that we're trying to compensate for hurt or pain or loss or betrayal or violations to our own bodies, that that we're sort of supposed to look good and, you know, on the outside and deal with on the inside. And that's why people come to therapy, because they need a safe place to take all that out of their system and reprocess it with someone else who understands, who's not judgmental, and who has some skills and tools to offer that are healing. So my own journey took me into therapy at a certain point in my life, and it was so valuable that I decided to go back and get my own degree as a psychotherapist. Go ahead.
No, go right.
I wasn't hearing you. I'm not hearing you. I'm so sorry.
No, I was saying, go ahead. If you were going to say something else, I was just mute myself out, because I didn't want to disturb you, because people really need to hear you.
Yeah.
You know, it was something that you were saying about, like, you know, how people have these mental health issues, like from the past, from their past, that they just, I can attest to that. You know, being raped at 14, I didn't deal with it until I was 49.
Very similar for me. Very, very similar for me. I didn't actually even remember what had happened to me until I was in my 40s. It was so buried. And so I was just sort of symptomatic, which is what I think a lot of people are. They become symptomatic. They suffer from anxiety. They suffer from depression. They suffer from rage or addiction or withdrawal or not being able to find healthy partners or having difficulty parenting their children or feeling unable to express their creativity. I mean, there's a million ways that we become symptomatic, and some people become symptomatic in ways that are mostly self-harmful, and other people become symptomatic in ways that are harmful to others as well, or both. And then we look at ourselves as flawed individuals rather than what happened that set me up to react the way I do, to feel the way I do, to sometimes feel like I can't manage my anxiety, or I'm so angry over the littlest thing and I don't know why it exploded. And there's so many answers to be gotten by actually looking at what happened to us in the past. And, you know, with a lens of looking for healing, not a lens of looking for blame.
Wow. How many times do you get people that come to you and say, I'm trying to find myself?
Probably most of the time, because if there's anything that separates a person from a connection to their true self, it's harm done from other people. It really is. And so, yes, and it's very prevalent in our society. Not that there aren't people who are fortunate enough to come from really loving, safe homes, because there are. But I think we may not be aware as a whole population in this country how many people are not, how many people are really suffering behind closed doors, and that the trauma just gets passed down from one generation to the next, because there's no healthy, helpful interruption in the cycle.
I was thinking the same thing about the generational things, because when you think about the family dynamics, if everybody says what goes on in this house stays in this house,
right?
That's kind of where it starts, because it's like way back generations,
that's
three,
right,
four generations, and you have these anger issues that have been, you know, that people have anger issues, and then it goes to one from one generation to the next, and then
that's
the next,
right,
and then everybody has anger issues, and then it's like, where does it end?
Right.
Who's
that's
gonna
right.
break the cycle?
Right. And I feel like there's two big things that, you know, there's so many big things that I have learned to emphasize as a therapist, but one of them is what I want to just say again, what I said before. One of the things that breaks the cycle, that helps break the cycle, is to find a place where you're not judged, where there's deep understanding. Because even for those of us who feel like in many ways we've been the victim of other people's rage or other people's assault or, you know, mistreatment on an emotional level or deprivation, most of us who sort of identify in that way, and many people really are the victims of horrible abuse by other people, but most of us have also hurt other people, you know, because we're just human, you know, and it's going to come out somewhere. We may not have assaulted another human being, but there's probably times where our anger got the best of us, or we walled somebody out that really was trying to care for us, or whatever we did. And so one of the most healing elements of good therapy is to take the judgment out and look for the root causes rather than point fingers. And as a society, we don't really do that. And that's one of the reasons, one of the many reasons why I've written the book that I just wrote called America in Therapy, because I want to bring these principles of the best therapy to our country and really to the world. But I live in America, so I'm talking to America. Because we need to bring this lens to each other that we're not going to judge. We're going to look for some deep understanding, because that's part of what heals. When a person feels really deeply heard and understood, their heart begins to open. Their defenses begin to drop. They're not in their fight or flight mode, right? The other big thing that I learned myself and as a therapist that I really want to share with your audience is it absolutely jives with the title of your program. And when you say you are not your trauma, and that is what I actually tell people, you are not what happened to you. You are not your symptoms. You are not your negative beliefs. You are not what other people might say about you. Inside, every person is a pure essence that they were born with. And the process of therapy is uncovering that.
I try to mute so then that way you can have
the
floor to yourself.
Sure.
But,
sure.
You know, as I'm listening to you, I can just imagine the amount of people that you impact as a psychotherapist, because your voice is very soothing and you're very, you know, just, I hear you. You know, it's like that's the type of person that you want to receive the information. That's the type of person that you want to be able to dig those things out of the corners that's been hiding for years.
That's
the problem, because it's in there, but somebody has to help you to bring it out.
That's right.
And let me, generations, you know.
Absolutely. And let me, you said something so important, because one of the things that I've learned, and it is sort of like, I feel like this is the one of the big answers lying hidden in plain sight, you know, that expression, is that the biggest injury that a person can sustain is a loss of love. That's the most harmful thing that can happen to our psyche, is a lack of love, being deprived of love, having love betrayed, or losing love. All the forms of injury to love are the deepest wounds that we experience, and we need love from another human being to heal. Yes, and there's a very, I know a lot of people say, I have to learn to love myself. And you know what? That's true. There's actually merit in that. But where do we learn that? We learn that from other people. We learn that from getting it from other people. And if we don't get it from our family of origin, we need to get it from one another. And when I first had the idea for this book, America in Therapy, the original title that I was thinking of was Out of My Office and Into the World. And I still like that title, you know, because I want to bring everything that I've learned as a psychotherapist and everything that I believe psychotherapy and family systems theory and all the good attributes of the best treatment that we have for each other, I want to bring that into the world. We can bring love to each other without going to a therapist. When I'm in a store and someone greets me like, hi, how are you today? I feel good. Yes. And I know when I do that, it helps other people feel good. And these are just, you don't have to be a therapist to do that. Right. So when you say, I have sort of a loving voice. Yeah. I want to have a loving voice because no matter what technique I use with people, whether it's guided visualization or inner child work or any of the other forms of therapy, techniques that I've learned, if I don't love people, what am I doing?
That's right. That is so true. You know, it's so weird that I was probably about 5 years ago, I was going to school to do marriage and family therapy. And I started taking the courses and I stopped taking the courses because I wasn't ready.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't ready because I guess I felt like at the time when you have certain things that's going on in your life and you're so distracted, you can't give it what it needs and what it requires. Right. And so then I went to therapy. So
great.
I am a firm believer in therapy. Great. Now, have you found that different nationalities feel different ways about therapy?
I think that I have worked mostly with a white population. Mm-hmm. I live in New Mexico, and some of my clients are also Hispanic, because that's more the population of where I live. And I've definitely had some people of color in my practice for sure, too. I think that for some people, yes, there is a taboo against talking about your feelings. And it's more just something you're supposed to keep to yourself, or it's a sign of weakness, or it's just not manly to be vulnerable. I definitely think that there are, but I also think that we're in such a crisis of mental health in our country that I think there is, and it may be slow and it may be small. I'm not really in a position to measure it. But I do think that there's a growing awareness that mental health issues affect everyone. And that, and I've had Native people come to therapy, especially in the program that I was working in, and who were very open to therapy and made great use of it. So I think it's starting to sort of like filter into the culture. And even if you're not, I wasn't brought up to believe that I should talk about my feelings. But I think with exposure to more and more people saying it's valuable, that I think that can cut across racial, religious, gender, and ethnic lines.
Mm-hmm. I think that is, therapy is very important, especially mm-hmm. for family. Mm-hmm. If you have, now correct me if I'm wrong. Correct me if I'm wrong.
Not gonna correct you.
but I'm just saying, but this is my thoughts. My thoughts is if you have a mother that has had a different type of background or that has been raped or abused or whatever. And then she has children. And then you have the husband over here that has had abuse in his life. Some kind of way that is going to cause some issues with that child. And so I always look at it like this. If you heal the mother, you heal the father, you can heal the whole family.
Yeah.
And, you know, and to me, that's more important than anything. It's just healing the whole family.
Well, there's absolutely nothing that I would correct because I'm in 100% agreement with you. You know, when I first started my practice, I wanted to focus on working with children. And I did focus on working with children for a while. And what I found was that invariably the child was suffering from something going on in the family. And they were the symptom bearer and the one brought to therapy. But actually, the help that was needed was primarily for the parents. And I ended up working with the parents to help the child. And so I shifted my focus away from child therapy and I did family therapy for a while. And then I just mostly ended up working with the adults because I totally agree with that, that we as the adults set the tone for the family. We role model how people love each other, how they express or don't express love. We role model how we express or don't express anger. And we role model, and this is so important, and one of the big issues that I'm talking about in my book is we role model how to deal with conflict. And most of us never learned good ways to deal with conflict. We either, you know, shut down, we scream, we lash out, we wall off, we retaliate, whatever. You know, because we didn't learn how to sit down and actually listen to one another and work toward resolution. And that's really what I see happening in our country. And that's one of the main reasons why I've written this book, because I don't see that conflict is resolved with, for the most part, especially at high levels and even on local levels, with the tools that we know work to resolve conflict, which are deep listening, developing empathy, hearing each other's pain, restraining ourselves when we want to lash out or walk out or throw something, having the goal that the goal is not I'm right and you're wrong, or you're going to win and you're going to be right and I'm going to walk away with my tail between my legs because I'm wrong. The goal is that we actually hear each other and we reconnect, that we come back to a place of agreement and reconnection. And even if we can't reach reconnection, which sometimes we can't because we're really pissed or we're really hurt, at least we reach an agreement that's nonviolent. Yes. That's nonviolent emotionally, nonviolent physically, and nonviolent verbally on all levels.
Yes. You know, I find emotional abuse is... I don't know. I feel like if somebody's going to emotionally abuse me, just hit me because it'll heal faster.
Yeah. Yeah.
The lasting effects of emotional abuse is what I want you to tap into.
Yes. I think primarily what emotional abuse looks like to me, and please jump in and expand on this if you have more to say, but I think it's the terrible messages we give each other about who we are, whether it's verbal or nonverbal. It can just be a look of disgust.
Yes.
It can be, you're never going to amount to anything. You know, so it can be very overt. You're fat, you're ugly, you're stupid. You know, no one's ever going to love you. I've heard all of this. People have received all of these messages in their homes. But sometimes it's more like, I don't think you should have that. Here's a carrot because you're getting a little heavy, you know, it can be subtle. Well, that's actually not very subtle, but you know,
it's like telling me, listen, don't put that in your mouth. Don't.
Yeah.
I had that issue, some years ago where, we went to a place with another couple. And And it was like a resort. It was a resort. We went to with this couple, and they eat family style. And I was a lot bigger than I am now, but we eat family style, and they have those real soft rolls, you know, the ones that, oh my God, the ones that melt your mouth, right? And so they passed it, and the guy that was with us, he said, "Don't you think you need to just pass that? You don't need to be having no more."
Wow.
Phyllis, wow. You don't know how I had to, because, you know, all of these people were at the table. If looks could kill, he would have been dead.
Good for you.
But I made sure, I was like, note to self, I am going to correct him. But why would you do that in front of people?
Right.
You know.
But would you say that it was painful, even though you were able? Yes.
It was painful. It was embarrassing. It made me not want to eat anything. I was shame-faced. It's so many different words, different things that come out of that. But can you imagine, like, people doing this to their children on a regular basis? What kind of adult does that turn into?
Right. And so, you know, I have a good example of that, too, from a client that I worked with who was just the loveliest woman. And her mother used to say to her, "When we're in public, don't talk, because I don't want people to see how stupid you are." You know, and when you say "hit me," that would be less painful. In some ways, there's truth in that. Not that I want anyone ever to be hit.
Right.
But that kind of injury does not go away. It cuts like a knife into your heart, into your mind, into your sense of self. And it doesn't go away without some very powerful reparative experience. And one of the things that I just really want to share with your audience is that the number of people in our country that receive messages like that, even if they don't receive them in their home, if they receive them from some social structure that looks down on them because of their gender, or their sexual identity, or their race, or their religion, or their disability, or whatever it is, it cuts just as deep. And for many people, it's a repetitive experience. It's not just one time somebody said something, not that that isn't just as harmful, because one time can be cut just as deep. But what I began to think about as a therapist is there are millions of people walking around who are receiving horrible messages about themselves from our culture, not just in their families. And of course they're symptomatic. Of course they're not thriving. Of course they're not fulfilling their greatest potential. And of course, many times they're acting out on themselves and on other human beings. And we have to know this, because as a society, we're responsible for the culture we create and the messages we give people.
I was going to say, most people who deal with emotional, would you say that most people that deal with emotional abuse as a child end up in horrible type of relationships, or either they start to do it to other people?
I would say, yes. I would say that is definitely one of the hallmarks of unresolved trauma at human hands, that we either become kind of passive and then we're dominated by somebody who wants to dominate somebody. And so, does that make sense? Yeah. Or we become the dominating person because we've made up a decision somewhere, probably unconsciously early on, that nobody's ever going to do that to me again. So I'm going to be the top dog. And this is very, very dangerous for our culture, because not only is it dangerous for the people living lives like that, and, you know, we all hear stories of, well, why didn't she protect her child? Well, actually, psychologically, we know why she didn't protect her child, because she was never allowed to protect herself. And she didn't learn that mechanism. It's frozen somewhere inside her psyche and her body. And I don't mean to just only label women, but that's often, you know, the dynamic. Certainly it covers all genders. or why would he do to somebody else what was done to him? Didn't he know how horrible it was? But we end up often doing exactly what was done to us, or repeating the same abusive dynamic, because nothing ever interrupted it so that we learned a different sense of self, which is a positive sense of self, and new life skills. And they go together. They absolutely go together. And so as a society, we're responsible for that too. You know, if we give people terrible messages and they act out, and we just say, what's wrong with you, and imprison them, we've helped nothing and no one, and we've just perpetuated the cycle of violence.
That is so true. That is so true. Tell me, as a psychotherapist, I mean, this is probably a question we probably should have already asked already, but as a psychotherapist, what exactly is your actual role? And like, how does all of that like intertwine with the family, like the psychotherapy? Now, we hear things about just a therapist, but we don't hear psychotherapy a lot. You don't hear psychotherapy.
So tell me exactly what your question is. What,
like, with the being a psychotherapist, what exactly do you do? Like, which directions do you take, with them, with treating?
Well, let me tell you something. Graduate school just prepares you. It doesn't actually, you learn on the field, because, and the reason why this is true, so you learn some skills and you learn some basic underlying psychological principles. At least I'll speak for myself when I say this. Maybe other people don't feel this way. But I feel like I had some grounding in, you know, just how the psyche works, what some of the healing modalities are, how to implement them. And then you see your first client and they don't fit any picture that you learned, because everybody is completely different. They have,
you don't know what you get. You just don't know.
So you have to like summon up everything that you've learned, and then you tap into your own sense of connecting with that person. And that's part of the work, is like, tell me more. Tell me what happened. Tell me how you felt. Tell me how you reacted. Tell me how you learned how to react that way. Tell me what that reminds you of from your childhood. Oh, and who said that to you? So it's like an exploratory, deeply heartfelt, because like, you know, if you don't want someone to say, tell me what happened in your childhood, you want them to care. So you want to hear, tell me what happened. What was that like? What did you make that mean about you? How did you learn to cope? And how has that played out in your life now? Because usually, I would say 100% of what brings people to therapy, number one is pain. And number two is the ways they've learned to cope with pain that they've come by honestly, for lack of any better role models, is not working in their adult life. Mm-hmm. Drinking too much isn't working. Screaming at their kids isn't working. Walling off from their husband isn't working. Fasting and dieting and over-exercising isn't working. So we listen deeply. We listen for the patterns. What's the pattern that took place here? Oh, you learned that you were stupid. So you tried to hide that by not talking, or you tried to overcompensate by being the know-it-all, you know, whatever.
Right.
So we take apart the patterns. We dig deep. And there's some really good psychotherapeutic interventions that I've learned over the years. One of them is called EMDR. I don't know if you've ever heard of that. Mm-hmm. That really gets to the heart of what the negative beliefs are that a person took on as a result of the things that happened to them that weren't good, and helps rework that whole pattern. Because as we begin to rework the pattern and start to believe positive things about ourselves, because the negative beliefs aren't true, we were just taught that they were true. sort of like you're not your trauma. You're not your negative beliefs either.
Exactly.
Once we start to feel more positive about ourselves, it's inevitable that our coping mechanisms are going to change.
Yes.
So if I feel like crap about myself and I grew up, let's just say I grew up feeling like I was ugly and stupid, then I'm not going to believe that anybody that I would actually like to be with is going to love me, because
that's right.
I'm going to think they're going to think I'm stupid and ugly. And as I begin to take that negative belief structure apart, I'm much more likely to attract someone who will love me, because I've already, you know, not operating on a negative image of myself and a lack of love.
Wow. And that's where they usually end up in bad relationships too.
Right. That's right. And we've all been there, right? We've all been there, you know, and fortunately for some people, they have enough help to get out of them. And some people don't, and they suffer, and they suffer, and they suffer, and their children suffer. And so, you know, what I just want to emphasize, because my book is called America in Therapy, what I really want to emphasize is, as a country, we can change the messages we give many of our people. We can change that. We can, if we want to, if we have the desire, if we see the cost in human suffering, if we see the negative consequences to all of us, and I know I'm talking fast, so you can slow me down, but
no, you're fine.
What I want to say is, like, you know, with the mass shootings that have taken place on innocent children, innocent people, randomly, the truth is that the acceleration of mental unwellness in our country has put every single one of us at risk. I don't know if I will be at the mall where that person will shoot. I don't know if it'll be my grandchild that'll be in that elementary class. And we can't know. And this is the time to do something about it, to address these issues on a national level. And that means we have to start giving people different messages about who they are, and give them different opportunities to thrive in this country.
Yes. And you know, I'm right here where the last shooting took place in Nashville.
Okay. Oh, yes.
Yeah. And that was so unfortunate. You know, my heart just went out to everybody involved.
Everybody.
And, you know, just everybody, even including the shooter, because it's what was wrong with the shooter that, you know,
that's right.
Somebody didn't help her.
That's right.
Or whatever. I don't remember what it was, but they didn't help her. And it was like, so when I think about it, think about all of this and living in this hurting world.
That's right.
And how many people need to be healed.
That's
that won't even go get the help. I'll tell people in a heartbeat, listen, if you work a job and you're having issues, call the EAP?
Uh-huh.
Call EAP. At least that's a start.
That's right.
You know,
that's right.
It's a start. You know, people, there's a lot of, they give them a list of different therapists that they can go to that, you know, within like their driving distance or whatever, whichever direction they want to go. But I just think that that's at least a start.
That's right.
Because if you unfortunately, can get that top off.
That's right. But unfortunately, a lot of people don't have access to that. I mean, absolutely, if you have any chance of getting help from someone who is in a position to do that, get it for sure. But a lot of people are not in that position. They don't have the resources. They don't have that kind of employment. And that's where, and I see there's a growing number of those people in our country. And that's where I feel like I look at America as a family also. We have our family with the parents, right?
Yes.
Parents and kids. I look at America as a family, and I call it the family of America. And the people in the positions of greatest power and influence are like the parents. They set the tone for the family. They make the rules for how conflict is dealt with. They set the standard for what the expectations are of different people in the family, right? And to the extent that those expectations and those policies and those attitudes and those laws are not just and not equal and not fair. We have the recreation on a national level of abuse dynamics that we're trying to heal on a family level. And I believe that we have to take an approach that addresses both. Help families, help the individual parents, do everything we can to help them before we incarcerate them, right? All right. And on a national level, look at where we're coming from. Look at how members of Congress role model conflict. This is what our children are learning. This is what we're saying is okay. Is it really okay? Would you like it if it was in your own home? So that's why I talk about the family of America. And I really believe, and I say this because it's frightening in a way to look at the correlation between an abusive or dysfunctional family and a lot of what goes on in America. But the hope is that if we really honestly look that in the face, we would feel motivated to change it. That's the goal. It's the same goal that I say for a family. The goal is not recrimination and hatred and blame and more acting out. The goal is, let's change this dynamic. Let's help people sit down and talk and listen and actually work to some kind of resolution. And what kind of a role model would that be? And the other thing I really want to add to that is, let's look at the allocation of our resources, right? What if the allocation of our resources was toward families, toward helping parents have a living wage, have good housing, be able to provide education for their children, provide therapy if needed? What if we invested in people instead of weapons? And, you know, I think a lot of people would say it's Pollyanna, it's never going to happen, you're talking utopia, you know, it's pie in the sky, it's just never going to happen, get real. But you know what I say? I say we went to the moon because we wanted to get there. If we could do that, we created computers. They're amazing. They're beyond me. If we could do that, could we heal our human relations?
Right.
I think it, all it takes is the will to do it.
Yes, it is. You know, this is amazing. I'm loving this conversation because it's tapping into a lot of different things. And I just hope that people that, you know, that tune into the podcast can kind of get a grasp, they can get a grasp of something, or even can see that they too can get therapy and help to heal their families, you know.
Right.
Have you ever like had a situation or even gotten to a point where you felt like because of certain situations with certain clients that you just wanted to just stop at any point?
Yes, of course. Of course, because we're
human. You're like, wait a minute, that right there is a given.
Right. No, I think the hardest clients for me were the ones that were the angriest and did not have a lot of restraint on their anger. But generally, and so, you know, I had to work with my own issues around anger. I don't like people raging at me. You know, I'm not good with that. But I had to learn as a therapist to tolerate it. I mean, not to let a client sit there and rage at me, because that's not therapeutic. But anger flares. Sometimes between a husband and wife, anger really flares. And every once in a while, that anger was directed at me. Not very often, but every once in a while. And I took it as something that I had to learn to grow with. Because if I couldn't tolerate the anger, how could I expect them to tolerate the anger? And so what I would do that really helped cut through it was I would say something like whatever they were telling me that they were. And again, it wasn't that often that the anger got directed at me. It was usually directed against a partner. But in any case, I would say something like, let's take a break. Let's stop here for a minute. I'm going to ask you a question. What does this remind you of from your childhood? What's going on here that is triggering you, basically? And inevitably, there's some terrible wound that it's triggering. Mm-hmm. And then you have access to something a little softer, a little bit more available, if a person will go there. And most people would, because I don't think most of us really want to rage at our partners. We just feel so powerless or hurt or stuck or whatever that we blow up. But I don't think most people really want to do that or like themselves when they do that. So the invitation is like, not stop your being a bad person, but tell me what this is bringing up for you. Tell your partner what this is bringing up for you. Let her or him really understand what got triggered in you. Where did it come from? Who, blah, blah, you know. And that usually would cut through it. And if the anger was directed at me, I would say something very similar. Tell me what's underneath this for you. How old do you feel right now? Who do I remind you of? Did I say or do something that actually I might have, you know?
You may have been taking sides, or that's something that I've heard. Mm-hmm. Oh, you're taking sides, you know.
Yeah, even if you don't feel like you are, or even if you're not perfect and you are, you know,
like this don't sound right. Right.
Because the therapist isn't perfect either. We're not perfect, you know. Right. And if someone says, you know, when you said that, it really set off this in me. If they say that to me, and I can't hold that, then I'm not modeling what I'm asking them to do with their partner.
That's right.
Does that make sense?
And that so these makes are, perfect
you,
sense.
You learn this on the ground. You do not learn this in graduate school. You learn this in the school of hard knocks. And so I say, you know, we're perpetually in graduate school as therapists. Like every session is a new class.
Yeah.
And I only, in all my years as a therapist, there was only one person that I said, I will not work with you, because I couldn't penetrate the rage and I was not willing to tolerate it coming at me. But that was one person in over 30 years.
And you take this stuff home, you know, you try to leave it. But I can imagine how mentally stressful sometimes that it can be, or overwhelming at times where you have to take a break in between. You know, you have to take a break, I would think.
Are you talking about as a therapist?
As a therapist, because so like what I was telling you, I did do a semester and she had us to, we had to go and do an interview with the therapist and follow them for a day.
Oh, interesting.
I did an interview with this one therapist, and I'm so happy that I did, because I knew what I didn't want to do at that point.
Okay.
Because I felt like the way at that time, it looked like I love working with people, but I need my time away.
Yeah.
My hours is my hours. I don't go beyond them. If I have do not disturb on my door, you know, and her husband was a therapist too. And he knew that when she had that on there, but like she said, you have to like guard yourself. She's like, you have to. She said, because you'll end up falling into some traps and feeling a certain ways because you almost carry what they carry, you know?
Right.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I love that issue, because that's actually really true for all of us.
Yes.
Whether we're therapists, we carry the vibes of the people around us. We carry what we hear on the news. We carry the pain of the parents of the children who were shot in their elementary school. And so we have to find a way to find some balance between still being empathic, caring, involved people, and having some kind of a boundary outside of ourselves where we don't let everything in. And we don't let everything out, you know, and that was described to me somewhere a long time ago. And I've often said this to clients, a healthy boundary is something like what you see a cell has, which is called a semi-permeable membrane. It lets some things in and it lets some things out, but not everything. And it's very selective. And we learn through a healing process or just through growing up or the good role models we get that we don't let in the most toxic things and we don't let out the most toxic things. And we also don't let out, you know, every bit of our vulnerability either. We really get selective about that. And so, yes, as a therapist, you definitely have to learn how to create that boundary in a way that you're still very relational, but you're not a sponge. Yes. But I think that's the challenge for all of us, actually.
That's true. Yeah, because even when we encounter new people that are around us, you can either say, oh, okay, this person is a joy to be around, or this person is toxic. You know, and then it's like if they have to be there, you learn how to, you know, put that wall up and that's only right. deal with a certain portion of that, you know.
That's right. So
I am actually going to have you to, like, I'm going to slide out of the way. I'm going to let you talk about your books. I want you to talk about, I'm really interested in this light and the darkness. I really, really want to know about that. But I'm going to just let you have the floor without me being on here and the things that you would like the audience to know about you, about being a psychotherapist and the things that it can help them to get over or to get through. Mm-hmm. So I am going to let you have the floor by yourself.
Well, thank you. And, you know, let me just say kind of quickly about the first two books that I wrote, A Light in the Darkness was the first one, and Into the Fire is the second one, that I'm not going to say a lot about them today because I really do want to focus on the book that I'm about to publish called America in Therapy. But what I really want to say is that those two books really outline the journey that I was on, lots of the parts of the healing journey that I was on from my childhood, which was, you know, which was difficult. Because as I said, there was trauma that I had buried and not remembered. And the first book kind of outlines, is very autobiographical up to the point where I had kind of a spiritual revelation, which really began to change my life. And I think for a lot of people, I just want to normalize that I think for a lot of people, as they're on a healing journey, many people actually find a different relationship to their own spirit or their own soul, or it might be their religion. And that's part of a healing journey. And so the first two books that I wrote are really about that. And while I would love to talk more about those books because they're very dear to my heart, I really want today to just focus on America in Therapy. As I said, because that's what's really up for me now, and that's what I would really like to share with you. And that is, I'll say a little bit more about how it came about. It certainly came about from being on my own healing journey, and then realizing, and I've said, you know, little pieces of this along my conversation here, but what I came to realize is that I'm not alone. I wasn't alone, and I felt so alone. And I think that is one of the terrible legacies of abuse or neglect or trauma at human hands, is that we end up feeling very alone inside our hurting little hearts. And we're really not alone. And I began to realize, especially as I became a therapist, that there's millions of people out there suffering the way that I was suffering, and probably even more. Although it's really hard to, it's hard to measure suffering. I think suffering is suffering. When your heart hurts, your heart hurts. When your body hurts, your body hurts. So that's not, we're not really comparing. So I realized that, and that was actually very helpful to me. And I began to read a lot of books by survivors of different kinds of abuse or neglect or trauma. And I began to realize how much this is an epidemic in our society. And as a therapist, I see that it's epidemic in our society, whether it's, you know, terrible messages like you're stupid, don't open your mouth, or sexual assault or physical violence, or being cast out of your family, or being, you know, persecuted for your religion or your race. And I've dealt with all of that in my practice. And one of the great gifts of psychotherapy, let me say it this way, I never imagined that I actually would be speaking about anything outside of my office. That was never an intention that I had. I was very happy to be a psychotherapist and do the kind of work with people that I did for many years. I never saw myself being on a podcast or writing a book about America. But what happened for me was that I began to realize that the same dynamics that I was seeing in individual families are happening in our country and affecting millions of people. And I don't know that we know that as a culture. I don't know that so many of even the victimizers in our society, in our communities, like we were talking about the school shooter, you don't become a school shooter if you have grown up in a really loving home and had good boundaries and learned peaceful conflict resolution skills and felt a sense of belonging and felt a sense of personal value and had some kind of meaning and purpose in your life, it's very unlikely you would become a school shooter. And so it felt almost like my obligation, really an obligation to share what I've learned as a therapist in an office and doing my own personal work, to share that with the larger community of our country. Because I really believe that we're headed on a dangerous course, that just like the person who's so disturbed that they would pick up a gun and kill people that they don't even know, and sometimes they do know the people, but often they don't know the people. But in any case, that you would pick up a gun and want to murder other people out of whatever agony you're in inside. That's the tip of a big iceberg. And the fact that we are even still talk, I mean, it really blows my mind, actually, that we still talk about using nuclear weapons, that we still are bombing innocent people in their apartments, in their homes, and murdering children who have nothing to do with the political battles that we're waging, that we're still investing in that we still see that as a way to deal with difficult human relations nationally and internationally, is a sign of our mental health really needing help as a country. And I feel like it's my professional and personal obligation to be the voice of that, that we really need help. Just like we would hope to take the gun out of the hand of a school shooter before they shoot anyone or before they kill themselves. I would hope that as a nation, we would want to take our weapons out of our own hands and look for every possible peaceful conflict resolution that is available to human beings. And we know what many of them are. We use them in our offices. We take them home with us. When we love someone, we try to work it out. And even if we have a fight, if we're in a loving relationship and we have some hold on our mental health, and we're not just completely out of control, we do our best to come back to a place of love and reconnection. And there's nothing like that. I don't think there's another human experience that equals what it feels like to love and be loved by another person in a safe environment. And so part of what I became aware of as a therapist is that there's this enormous gap between what we all want for ourselves and what we condone and what we allow and what we perpetrate and what we enact as policy on a national level. And sometimes it's a local level too. But there's this gap between what we all want. I don't know anyone who wants violence in their life, in their own personal life. I don't know anyone who doesn't want love in their life or safety in their life or good provision or adequate housing or mental health or health care. And yet we deny these things to our neighbors and we justify it the way abusers justify their abusers, the abusers they perpetrate in their families. And so for me, the relationship between the microcosm of the family and the macrocosm of our larger institutions, communities, and our government is no longer deniable. And we have access to healing. And I want to make that a public conversation. I want it to be you know, my dream, and again, I don't think this is utopian. I don't think any of it is utopian, because we actually do it in our offices. We do it in our homes, and we don't do it perfectly. And that's not the goal, because we're human and we're fallible. And sometimes we slip up and we have to repair and say we're sorry. But my goal is that some of the best policies, some of the best practices of the best deep listening and empathy building and conflict resolution that we know create psychological well-being could become the conversation, so that when there's a school shooting, and there probably still will be some, unfortunately, or a mass shooting, that what the news is covering is having, you know, people in the world of psychology and mediation and childcare and, you know, all education, housing, people come together and have a conversation, and this be the focus of how can we put our best minds together to resolve the issues that lead to this in the first place? That's what I want to see all over the news. That's what I want to see the focus of our country. And I think a lot of people want to see that. So that's why I've written this book, and there's a lot in it. And I'm so grateful to have the opportunity to share everything that we've talked about today. And I'm ready for you to come back on.
Boy, you are like, you're amazing. You just have like a whole bunch in there, like, you know, for everybody. And so here, I did put your website down here.
Thank you. Thank you.
www.phyllislevitt.com. And do you do virtual or face-to-face, or do you do both? How do you do your therapy session?
You know, I actually am retired from my practice. I'm actually...
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I'm focused now on my book and public speaking, because... You know, I'm really at that place in my life where I want to take out of the office what I've learned into the world. So that's my focus right now. But if anybody wants really good therapy, they're welcome to contact me on my website, because I have some good referrals to make.
Well, that's great.
Yeah.
That is great. See, you do like I do. I've been a nurse for 25 years, but I haven't been doing nursing. And so I'm writing different things for nurses. And, you know, it's just very valuable things to help them to be more successful, you know, in the nursing field. We have a lot of things that are missing.
There's a lot of things.
I wish I would have known you before I did my conference. My conference is coming up. And it's May the 24th, and it's called Wound Care.
Oh, okay.
Yes, it is. It is We're Overcoming the Unhealed with Necessity and Determination.
Wow.
Creating an avenue to recover everything.
I love it. Well, if you ever do it again, I'm game.
Yeah. Hey, this is going to be a movement. So this is the first one, and it's here in Tennessee, in Murfreesboro, Tennessee.
Okay.
But this is going to be a movement. So that means that it's going to move to the next place. I'm pretty sure that the next place is going to be Cleveland, Ohio.
Okay. Great.
That's where I'm from. But I will definitely let you know, and I'll keep you in mind, because definitely I do have... I actually have a psychotherapist that is going to be one of my speakers.
Great.
Yeah. But I felt like that was needed, because we're dealing with people who have anger, bitterness, rejection, shame, guilt, you know, have gone through all of these different things, different types of abuse, sexual assault, and death, even COVID. You know, a lot of people can't get over the fact that they've lost so many people to COVID. You know, and just death of a spouse or whatever. But we want to tap into everything. We're trying to get everything, because each person has their own special area. Right. And I love it because of that. And that's why I just feel like God is just absolutely amazing for even allowing me to put these people together to help his people heal.
Fantastic. Wonderful. More power to you. Really?
Because it's all about him. It's not about us. It's like, you know, we can think that it's about us if we want to, but it's all about God and his purpose and his purpose over everything. And it does not matter, but it's purpose over everything. Yeah.
And it's all about collaboration, which is what you're doing. You know, we need each other. I think that's one of the things that is not well understood in such an individualistic society. We need each other.
I'm glad that you said that, because I've experienced people saying, oh, I don't want to have this person on my show because they try to show me up. And we do the same thing. Everybody is not for everybody.
Right.
So whereas I put people on my show to do the same thing that I do, I have people on my show that do coaching like I do. They do a lot of different things that I do. And guess what? The floor is wide open for them to, you know, if they have a book, hey, let's get this book out here, because it may be something in that book that they need that maybe I don't talk about, or I've never experienced. And that's what I love so much about collaboration, because all of us bring bits and pieces of the puzzle together.
And that's collaboration really true.
And not competition.
Exactly. I mean, 100%. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. But thank you so much, Phyllis. I so appreciate you accepting the invitation and coming here. And this has been wonderful. I think we probably could keep talking. But
for sure. I never run out.
I know. Yeah. But remember, I said, when it's your story or when it's what you do and you're authentic, don't send me no questions, because
thank you so much for having me. It's just been a delight, and you're wonderful. You're a wonderful podcaster. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. I'm going to put you back down. We're going to close this out, and thank you so much for coming.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you guys so much for tuning in to You Are Not Your Trauma with Dr. Wendy Rhodes. And we have Miss Phyllis Levitt, wonderful author, psychotherapist. And we are all done here today. So peace and blessings to each and every one of you.